You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Hi, folks. How are you? What's going on? Holy crap, man. Hope everybody had a good weekend. Nice and long. Yeah? What'd you do, Ryan?
Well, you know, this last weekend I was sick, so I couldn't really do much.
Oh, yeah. That sucked, man. You feel you're better now.
I feel better. Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of looked like a bit of a smacked ass when you came in because you were wearing you know, it's around Halloween now, so it's the you were wearing the Pennywise costume.
I was Pennywise recently in a sketch on YouTube. Yeah,
on a sketch on YouTube, which you can check it out. Where can I check that out?
It's on the Warp Zone YouTube channel.
Check that out. You'll check out Ryan. He's Pennywise, and he had to wear these contacts. He'd never worn them.
I hate contacts. Dude, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it.
I'm wearing them now, but I'm still not used to them. You know, a lot of stuff going on. You know, the album's been out for about, I don't know, about a month maybe. And that's really about it, man. In Love with Michael Rosenbaum and Chris Sullivan, as you know, is airing every Monday. So make sure you subscribe and write a review. We need you. Today on the podcast, we have Joe Latriglio. If you don't know Joe, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, he's amazing. He's hilarious. I've known him for a long time. There's a couple of moments here in this podcast that I know I was transfixed on what he was saying, and so was Ryan. It was just really, it was powerful.
It was.
It was simple.
Yeah.
Powerful.
It was applicable to a lot of things.
Yeah, it was. It was applicable to a lot. It doesn't matter if you're an actor or whatever. What he says is, like, sometimes we're jealous of this, whether it's a neighbor or I'm jealous because, you know, my buddy Dax has way more followers. And jealousy's not good. You know, you're just like, it's like, gosh, you compare yourself to others. And he has something really to say about that. And it's really pretty profound. You know, today it's pretty interesting. The first thing that he's going to get a colonoscopy tomorrow. So you're hearing him the day before where he has to not eat anything. And you can tell he's going a little stir crazy. But, you know, you've seen him on The State if you're old enough, back in the MTV years ago, Reno 911. So many things. You've seen him in everything. Super bad. This is one of my favorite guests. I think I say that a lot, but really I've known this guy a long time. And I just love him and I miss him. And it was good having him in here. I think you're going to really dig. So let's get inside of Joe Latriglio.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
I didn't know what the hell I was doing in the beginning. I was convinced that I should do a podcast. Someone goes, you got a good voice. You know people.
Yeah.
Have a podcast. So I didn't want to do it. And then I did it thinking, okay, maybe I can make some money. And then I realized, wow, it's not easy to make money in a podcast. What happened was I probably would have quit. But one day I just started to become really vulnerable.
Uh-huh.
Really, you opened up like a bit. Really, it was therapy for me because I realized the way I was living was not honest. I mean, yeah. I think everybody thought, oh, he's got his shit together. He organizes everything.
Yeah.
You know, he was on a hit show. He's always working. He's doing this. He's so happy.
Well, I'll say this. I'll say that already you're an affable guy. You're a friendly guy. You're a warm guy. And you love conversation. And you know people. I mean, those are the type of people that should be having a podcast. You're also generous and curious. Two other qualities for a good podcast. So here's to you on your 90,
whatever episode. Thank you, Joe Latriglio.
Mm-hmm.
But it became vulnerable. It became like I felt like I had purpose. That's why I do it. I do it because I really love to talk to people and find out how they get through. They face adversity. How did they get through it?
Right.
What do they do? What makes them tick? You know, people say, oh, what are you doing now? Oh, you're doing Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Oh, you're a big star. But they don't know your journey. And I sort of know your journey.
Sure.
I know the shit that you went through.
Well, I'll say this, that I don't do a lot of podcasts. I often get self-conscious about it. But I also like to see my friends. And I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah.
And isn't that funny? Like, I find this goes back to the guys at The State and everything. You grow up, you get older, they have kids, you have a family. You're like, how can I see more of them? How can I see my friends? What if they have a podcast or we work together? And then you're, and
what
then
if I'm
suddenly
forced what, to see them. I have to. I can't. If, I just can't meet them at Jerry's
what
Deli.
If I don't show up, I don't get paid, and I have to see them.
Let's hope they're a guest star on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
That would
be
only
perfect.
Way.
It's so convenient for me.
What am I gonna do? Text? Email, give me a break.
It's hard.
The only way. I was anxious to see you. Haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah,
and
it's been a while.
So I was excited about coming here.
You know, Matt
talking
Ballard.
About the journey.
Matt Ballard just texted me like 5 minutes before you showed up. Our good friend Matthew Ballard, I went to college with him. We got naked at college. We did the cherry run. Ballard is now a family man. He's doing really well. He's doing something with Rob McElhaney.
Yeah.
Always Sunny. Great guy.
Great guy.
Guy that everybody loves. And you guys always, all the guys from the state, Showalter and Marino and
the whole
Wayne,
gang.
Everybody always, Michael, Ian Black, you guys, and I noticed, like, wow, he became friends. And I knew you guys.
Yeah.
We all knew each other. Did you used to steal
meet,
money.
Did I meet you through Ballard? I've been.
No,
not
I don't
really.
Think so. No, I think I knew you first, maybe.
I think you did. And remind me if I'm wrong, it was through MTV. Were we at MTV or was it even before MTV?
It was around there where you guys were doing the state. And if you guys out there listening don't know who the state was, look up some old videos, find it. Because it really, all these guys' careers, like David Wayne, Michael Showalter, they've gone on Hot What America
Tom
Summer.
Lennon.
Tom
Grant,
Lennon.
Ken Marino, Kerry Kenny.
And if you don't know, if you're thinking, I don't know those names, I know, look them up. Look those names up and you're like, holy crap, that guy's hilarious. This guy's hilarious. Oh my God, look what he did. These guys all started together. They met at New York University?
New York University. Some of us were in film, some were in drama. But now we old.
You say trauma?
I meant to say drama, but...
We
maybe
were in trauma.
I'll tell you.
Because you're from Queens, right? That's why you're trauma.
Well, I'm thinking about trauma. Can I tell? Can I tell you why?
Some did comedy, some did drama.
I'm thinking about trauma right now because, this is why it's amazing that I'm doing this podcast inside of
All right, when you hear it.
Tomorrow I'm getting a colonoscopy. Today, I'm in prep. I can't
today
eat anything.
Inside you tomorrow, right.
Yeah.
Dr. Schwartz.
No, you're inside. That's
you.
Right. I got two people. Coming at me. Now, have you done that yet?
Here's what's also funny. It's just, I guess it's because of our age. We just talked about our age. But, you know, the age just went down. 2 years ago, I went in to a gastroenterologist.
Uh-huh.
I can't pronounce. Is that
yeah,
right?
I don't know.
Too long. Just say ass doctor.
The ass guy. You know.
And I went to him because my buddy Harlan Williams, you know Harlan?
Yeah.
You know, Harlan's the, if you guys don't know, he's been on the show, the Dumb and Dumber guy. Hey, you guys drinking out of some of Grandpa's cough medicine, are you, bud? So he said, you know, I went to the ass guy, and I got a colonoscopy. You should really do it. I was worried and checked out for polyps and stuff. I didn't have anything. I'm clean. You should probably get.
So I bet he has peace of mind.
I went to see this ass doctor, and I sat down with him, and he looked at me and goes, you know, how old are you? And at the time, I was like 44. He goes, yeah, you know, most guys don't get this till 50 unless there's some things going on.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I read it in Men's Journal or something like a year ago. They've knocked down the age to 45.
That's right.
So now I'm older than that age.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to go get a colonoscopy. There's a few of my friends that want to go get it. We might want to document it.
Uh-huh.
You know, go together.
Yeah.
Shit
are you
our faces
use footage
off.
That they take?
I don't know. I don't know if I... But, you know, they say the worst part is the night before when you're just unloading, unleashing.
Yeah, that's tonight for me.
That's You're that's doing that tonight.
Yes, that's
so what
saying.
Do you have to do?
So,
by the way, this is good for you guys to hear because it's important.
So many of your listeners are of this colonoscopy age, I'm sure.
Well, this is health. Regardless if you have a husband, a boyfriend, or you're
sure.
Whatever
you
should
it
know
is.
This is Joe's
however
doing this
help.
Tomorrow. What are you doing tonight to prepare? What are you doing today?
Well, today, you know, it's just a clear liquid diet, guys. I get no breakfast, water, I could have coffee, tea. The instruction booklet says nothing red or purple. Now, do I drink Kool-Aid? No. Maybe some of you out there would, so, or popsicles. Do I have a lot of red or purple popsicles during the day? I don't have any. I can't remember the last time I had one of those, but I certainly can't have them today.
Clear fluids.
Clear fluids. Chicken broth, you know, some, you know, beef bouillon broth.
How hungry are you right now?
Not that hungry. I don't eat breakfast that much anyway.
But I'm glad this podcast wasn't at like 4.
That would have been, I would have been hangry. It's going to be tough later for me.
Yeah, I'm glad we got you
when
early.
When I go to my therapy session at 5, that'll be interesting. Right before.
I wonder.
When I haven't had anything to eat.
You still go
what's
to therapy?
Going to still, no. I just kind of started a few months ago.
Marital problems?
It's everything, your whole life. Yeah.
It's everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
You see how I just jump in there? Marital
my
problems?
Marital issues?
Who says that?
I don't know. So anyway, that's happening for me tomorrow.
So tonight, all fluids, you'll
all
be hangry,
fluids,
you'll go to sleep, you wake up.
Well, you have to take this liquid stuff
at
like, you know, right before you go to, 4 hours before you go to bed.
What is that?
I don't know, but from what I hear from my friends that have done it, it just tastes terrible and it just makes you shit. I mean, that's, you know, clears it out, clears out the pipes. So, you know, I kind of have to stay indoors.
Did people prepare Ryan, you're laughing.
Is this one of the... It's funny.
This is Ryan, by the way. This is my engineer, Ryan.
No, it's funny. Like, you have to stay... You can't really go anywhere.
And, you know, a friend of mine just was going to have a screening tonight, and I'm like, I want to go. And he's like, actually, you know, we may have some... It's pretty tight. You really want to go? I really do, but it might be good that I don't because... dot, dot, dot. So, yeah,
because,
you have to stay.
Because a lot of reasons. One, I have to have the very back row aisle. One.
Right.
If you can't get me that seat, I'm not coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or going.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That it's important.
I didn't want to put that pressure on him.
Ryan's too young. Ryan here is how old are you?
31.
You're 31. So you don't even have to think of this right now, right?
Yeah. No, I got some time.
Do you get prostate exams, Ryan?
No.
Have you ever had a finger in your buns?
Well, that's different.
You have had that?
No.
You haven't. Have you, Joe?
Sure.
I've only had one in my life, and I have this conversation with a lot of people.
Oh,
because a lot of guys will tell me they have fingers in their prostate, they get prostate exams. And I go, no, my doctor says it's unnecessary now. You can just do a blood test, check your PSA, and you're fine. Mm. But I'm hearing back and forth things like that. So I actually went to my doctor. I said, look, I'm a little like, I don't know, sensitive about this. Like, you have not put a finger in my ass.
Yeah.
In the 20 years I've known you. I don't
like
know.
We've known each other a long time. How come no finger in the
butt? And he goes, do you want one? I go, not if I don't, if you really don't think I need one.
Even if you don't need one, is it that bad?
I had one right before I had back surgery once, and there was no need because I'm like, I'm having back surgery, not ass surgery.
Right.
So the guy says, Mr. Rosenbaum, I'm going to, you know, this is protocol. So if you could bend over, I want you to know that don't be embarrassed. Some men, not all men, but they occasionally ejaculate. and I told him if this happens, I'm going to jump 8 stories to my death out this window.
Of shame and embarrassment.
Could you imagine? You're there as a straight guy or a gay guy.
Yeah.
And this old guy puts a finger in your butt and you unload on this cold hospital floor.
That'd be tough. It's just not personal. It's not a personal, intimate moment that you want to have, that you want to remember, really. You know?
Yeah.
You want something with a little bit more ambience.
Yeah. tomorrow, do they, you wake up and what time is your procedure?
I think it's around 1, and I got to be there around 12:30. I'm going under the gas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, is it gas, or can they
put
you under? You want gas, or you could take...
The heavy-duty drugs.
You don't like that.
Well, it's not that, but I'm told that, or I was warned, that you might not feel pain, but feel something. And I don't want to feel anything. I don't need to remember this. Just, like, go in there, tell me what's up, and I'll wake up, and then you tell me. And so I'm going to go with the anesthesia.
Oh, you're going with anesthesia. So you can go anesthesia or gas.
No, no. The gas being the anesthesia, or like opioids, narcotics that they just like intravenously.
I want to be out.
I want to be out.
Out. I want to wake up and go, you weren't in my ass.
Yeah.
I don't think you were. You can't prove it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's... Show me pictures.
Yeah.
Oh, there they are.
Oh, yeah, you were in there.
Yeah, you were there. Okay, fine. Sure. You know,
are you nervous?
A little bit. I shouldn't be. I never used to be nervous about stuff like this, and I'm not really very nervous. But I had surgery before, like adenoids out, tonsils when I was a kid, and needles don't scare me. But like, I don't know if it's you get older. You have more to lose. You're enjoying life more.
You have a kid.
Yeah, I have a kid.
Eli. Named after Eli Manning.
Stop it. No.
You're a Jets fan, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Let's not even talk about that right now. We almost named his middle name Jet because of that. Thank God we didn't. That would have been.
Well, you could have told people it was after a Wing song.
Well, a Wing song.
Jet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Jet. Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, you know. We decided that at the end of the day, when I hear the name Eli, I'll probably still think of my kid and not Eli Manning. See, before the kid comes, you hear Eli,
right.
I think of Eli Manning. But now that Eli is here, I'm going to think of my son.
Right.
So that fear was quickly washed away.
Right. All right. Look, we've talked about ass for the first 10 minutes of the show. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
Look, I've known you for a long time. We talk about the state. I remember those days when... You were always so humble, so fun to be around. I just felt comfortable around you. Just a genuine guy. You've always been so genuine. And I always said, I always thought, God, I want that guy to keep,
nice,
doing
right?
well.
Well, thanks. Like,
you're just a genuinely good dude, and you're so funny. And I remember watching the state and going, God, this guy's so funny. You just got to... And I remember you struggled. We all struggled, but for years, right? Your way. People think, oh, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He did Reno 911.
Yeah, Reno 911.
That's kind of hard to say. Reno 911, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I played a lot of cops. One, that's really nice of you to say, Mike. And the struggle's real for a lot of people, for many of us actors. But I try to surround myself with good people. That was the first step. And try not to take it too seriously. But, it was nice to have the success I had. But, there's some bitterness there. There was some comparing myself and some jealousies along the way that you have to kind of, eat up,
Did you ever resent, in the beginning, thinking, one of your buddies, your peers, I think we've all gone through it, is like, he's doing so well. It's like, why can't he just give me a lift? Why can't he just why can't he drop me off at 23rd and 4th?
Give me a ride. Give me a lift to, a nice series.
But something, right? There's no way, I have friends that, when I was on Smallville or in Pastor, I was filming in Canada, so they would hire all Canadian locals. And, sometimes I'd have people audition or something. I didn't have that choice. It's not in Pastor finally was a thing where I was an executive producer. I was like, hey, I want my friend whoever to come up. Yeah. I want my friend Troy to do this. I want my friend Roger to come up. Yeah. If there's a role, I want them, even if it's not that big, I want them to be a part of it.
Well, that I would do if I was ever a creator or producer of a show. I mean, these are things I'm trying to do. But that's when you give back, I think that's great that you did that. You have to do that.
But I've been a creator of things that haven't aired. Or have not even been shot. Just I sold something. So that's, when I did my movie, I remember I directed this movie back in the day and it was just a raunchy, lowbrow, fun comedy. And I was like, Ballard, you're flying out. Sarah Gillar, you're flying out. Joe Spina, you're flying out. Whatever I could do, my friend Jay Ferguson, who's on Mad Men, he already had a career, but I'm like, please do this role. Any of my friends, I just wanted to be in the movie.
It's so satisfying, isn't it?
It
How
is.
How good do you feel? Maybe 5 years ago, me and Michael William Black created this show called Beef, which was like Judge Judy meets The Sopranos, and the bit is it takes place at a butcher shop, and the guy I'm forgetting the character's name, but Chris Maloney played him, would settle these neighborhood in skirmishes, I went over with a nice craft beer over to Johnny's Super Bowl party, and then he wouldn't let me have that. He hid the beer, and we had to drink his Bud Light shit, and I feel then he kept the craft beer, stuff like that,
right?
And so. And I invited Ballard, did some, and a lot of my friends that, are so good, so talented, but just haven't gotten, that chance yet. It felt awesome. I feel that's important. I think you got to look out.
I think it is important. And it's also hard when you don't have a lot of especially when I was on Smallville, I had a lot of success. I just remember going, I know what they want. They want these pretty boys and these pretty girls on the show, and they have to be Canadian. They can't afford it because they're cheap, and they, unless it was it just was and you're like, you're on a hit show, dude. Why can't you get me on Smallville? It's like, if you look at it, everybody was young except for me.
Yeah.
Everybody's young, and there's my dad, Lionel Luther, but there wasn't a lot I could do. Right. I did try.
And also, you weren't a producer. Were you a producer?
No, I wasn't a producer.
So you didn't have that level. No. A lot of it is this kind of misunderstanding of how the business works and how the power, structure works and the hierarchy. And because you're like, oh, you're on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Just put me on. I'm like, believe
That's
me.
That's not how it works.
I mention you to Jewel Bestrup, who was a fantastic casting director.
You mentioned me to her?
I have not mentioned you.
I thought you were talking
really
to me.
It's really awkward that you asked me that.
I'm so sorry, Joe.
Fine. All right, Rosie. I'll talk to her. Oh, unbelievable. So anyway.
How does he do it?
How does he do it? you have to go through these certain channels, and I do. I do.
And by the way, Joe.
You want to come on the show?
Would I come on Brooklyn Nine-Nine? Yeah. You mean a hit show that you're on that people
know.
Love?
I don't know.
Would I do it? Yeah.
Look, some people are selective in with
I am
careers,
so, look, I am selective in terms of I just don't like it. A lot of people go, why aren't you doing it? I go, you know what? I just want to do my own stuff. And unless it's obviously if it's something that I just, Jensen Ackles, he's the lead on Supernatural.
Okay.
And he emailed me last night. He's like, dude, call your fucking agent and get on Supernatural. It's our last season. And I'm like, and it's so nice because this is a huge show, huge fun. He's got 8 million people. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I love Jensen and I love, love the show. I love Supernatural shit and I love the fans and the fans are great. So I'm like, you know, if it's the right thing, I would do it. Of course. Yeah. Are you kidding me? I'd be lucky. But yes,
We'd be lucky to have you. So dude, I'm going to phone your name out. Are you kidding me?
I'd love it. Even if it was like something fun and quick, I don't give a shit. I don't have an ego with that stuff. Just come in and be funny.
Egos are tough to keep in check, aren't they?
Dude, I've been learning about ego. Yeah. I've talked about this, but you don't know this, but I went off to a wellness center for 3 weeks.
Well, I listened to some of your podcasts.
So I must have talked.
Peripherally, I do, but not right. a lot. But you were talking about meditation. I just started that a few months ago as well.
Every day?
I do it every day for 10 minutes. I've missed, you know, sometimes I miss a day or two, but it's been very, very helpful.
How do you feel when you miss a day?
Guilty. Yeah.
Isn't that something? It's like a routine thing. It's like, I try to express it to people, but if you're doing something like everybody goes, oh, I wake up, I drink 4 cups of coffee. Oh, I wake up, I have a cigarette. Oh, I wake up, I do this. I go, now imagine that you feel like you have to do that. Imagine you break that routine. You don't do that. You know, you quit a habit, takes 21 days. Imagine a new habit. Mm-hmm. And now you're going, that's what happens. It's like, I hate meditation. And then 2 weeks in, I'm like, I have to keep doing that.
Yeah.
And now today's 96 days straight. I wake up and I do 20 minutes and I cannot miss it or I feel like a failure.
That's a
good routine now. Yeah. Even if people think, oh, well, I don't know how my mind's racing. I'm like, motherfucker, look at me.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because that was an intimidating thing for me starting meditation as well, because you're like, how do you meditate? I got incense. Everything's got to be quiet. No. And then, you know, I was working with Zap. I was listening to this app.
I thought you were going to say you're listening to Zap Galifianakis. You know,
I'm listening to Galifianakis's meditation tape, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
You know what? I'm going to let you finish it. You got to finish this, but I really want to do, he knows this. I want to do a meditation app. I want to do my voice.
Yeah.
Like, because, but I want to like talk about what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Like it would be shit like this, Joe. I want to hear yours too. Mine would be like, all right, listen, if you're like me, you know, your mind is going nuts right now. I should take a piss before this thing. I should probably, I don't know, wash my face. I should brush my teeth. My breath is so bad right now. But listen, nothing matters right now. No one's smelling your breath. I want you to just, my nose is a little, it's not clear, so that's why you're hearing that. You hear that's like a truck in the distance.
I would listen to that.
But it's just like
real. I would call me. I would be like, I am thinking those things. How does this guy know that?
What would yours be?
I think it's always deep, right? But it would be, let's sit down, let's find a comfortable place. Let's concentrate on what it feels like to think about what you're going to do later. Wait, don't do that. Breathe. Did you make plans to have lunch? Don't think that either. Just thought all these things.
Hang on.
I like to keep sabotaging the meditation a little bit.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the
way. Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my
husband and co-host Benjamin
Wallen. Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid
alive. Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
So we talked about your journey. When you were doing the state, I mean, this is MTV back in what year?
This was 92. We did a show called You Wrote It, You Watch It, which we were reenacting letters about from fans. And we were doing that show. That wasn't our show. We were one of the directors on there. And then that was 92. I'm losing all track time. I think 93 is when we started the state.
Yeah, because I think I did the pilot for that show that never made it, like in 95 or 96. So that's probably around the time.
95, we did the CBS disaster. You know, the see when we jumped to the network, and then that was like October 95. So the MTV show was like before then.
So what was it like? I mean, you're at New York University, you're meeting all these guys, these big personalities. Was there an immediate attraction, immediate love between all of you, where you were just like, you all thought each other were really fun and you liked everybody?
Yeah, there was at a, we took each other pretty quickly. And I don't know, it's one of those things where you never know why this group of people got together. I think we were all very smart, ambitious, extremely talented. Those guys are incredibly talented. And so I feel like that, you know, people like that attract each other. And there was safety in numbers. There's like, okay, what if we came up with, you know, a group where we can all perform and write? And so it happened pretty quickly in terms of us getting along. Of course, as you move on, there's dysfunction in any big group. And, you know, those dynamics start to get particular and everyone sees what annoys each other about each other. And so
who was the leader though? Was there a leader? Was it David Wayne? Was
the
leader then?
No. The our friend Todd Hollebeck founded the group. Todd Hollebeck was in a sketch group with David Wayne and Mo Willems. You know who Mo Willems is?
I don't.
Mo Willems is an incredible and very popular children's book author. And he had founded this sketch group called the Sterile Yak that Todd Hollebeck and David Wayne were in. Todd broke off from that and formed a group called The New Group, which ended up becoming The State. So this is all at NYU.
Now, who did you think, honestly, in the beginning, when you first were there and like in school, you're like, this guy's the funniest. Who did you look up to where you're like, I mean, not to say, look, this is then. So it's not like you're saying, throwing anybody under the roof.
Yeah.
Who was it that you're like, God, this guy's going to be a star?
Wow. Well, you know, Ken was like, Ken made me laugh very hard. Marino. Tom Lennon was wicked smart and funny. Although it's funny, Tom Lennon, and we talk about this, so I don't feel bad sharing this. Like, I didn't like Tom when I first met him. Tom seemed very like arrogant to me and standoffish. And we ended up going in for this student film directed by Adam Marcus, who did one of the Jason movies. Mm-hmm. And we were in the audition and we just hit it off. We had a great audition. We booked this student film and we've been close ever since. I love that man. He's generous. But it's interesting, right? How you meet somebody and like you don't take to them immediately and then they become really, really close. Do you have friends like that?
Yeah. I also think it's easy for people. I don't know how many times someone has, you know, said either about me or about a friend of mine or somebody I know or an actor. And now I've learned not to listen. They're like, yeah, my friend Joan, her friend John's friend Jim said that Dax Shepard was not really nice. And I'm like, why? And by the way, this isn't a true story.
This is not a true story.
No, it's not a true story. But like, you know, and I'm like, why? Oh, I don't know. She said she went up to him to get a picture and he didn't want to take a picture. I'm like, do you think maybe he might have been having a bad day? You think maybe he was in a rush? Was he eating? Was he?
Yeah.
You know, I'm a good judge of character. I think that's a good trait of mine. For the most part, I meet people. I'm like, this person's good. I trust them. They seem like a genuine person. My friends are better than me for the most part. But I give people the benefit of the doubt. They say so-and-so. I go, you know.
That's why you have so many friends. I mean, what's amazing about you, Rosie, is that I went to your Halloween party. I don't know when it was, a few years ago.
Probably in October.
Was it last year?
It was at that place in New York City.
Me and Mather Zickel, another terrific character actor. We were a bunch of boneheads showing up, like not in costume. Everyone's in costume. And so I think I wore like a Quint shirt or some Jaws shirt. Anyway, you have so many people that love you. You should know that. You should know that because it's important and it's easy to forget things like that, especially when you're feeling, I don't know, alone or out of it, not in sync, not feeling like you belong. Like I went there, I'm like, look at all these guys, Rosie. That's amazing. And it's true. And I was happy to be there and to be invited and that I also knew you. So it just hold on to that and own that because that's an important thing to remember when you have those days where you're like, what the fuck am I doing again?
Well, you know what? I want to say, first of all, I genuinely thank you for that. I think that's incredibly kind of you. And I appreciate that. The problem in my mind, it's not that I don't believe you. It's not that I don't think they love me, my friends love me. It's this dichotomy of, yeah, of course, but then, well, I'm always organizing stuff and doing fun things and doing this and having Thanksgiving and having a Halloween party and doing, what if I just didn't do that anymore? Would they still be showing? Would they still want to give a shit about me?
Right,
would they still
love me?
And I would hope the answer is yes.
Of course.
I think some of them for sure. I'm just like, sometimes I worry. I go, God, you're such a helper. You're such a people pleaser. You're such a like, I want to be liked, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's kind of like, dude, fuck.
We all want to be liked.
True, but like you don't, you have your family, you have your job, you have your kid. You don't go, hey, I'm going to do this and invite all these people all the time. And
right.
And I am getting better at it. And I've been working on myself, but you know, and I genuinely think people care about me.
Yeah,
I do. That's not about
that. That's not an issue,
right? It's hard for me to allow people in, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just, you know, I've talked about this a billion times, but you know, getting it at a young age, getting it in life, and you walk around life and you're like, oh, I don't know if I've ever been really felt love.
Yeah.
Like that I was really like loved. Few people, I feel that way.
Yeah.
But
I can relate to that. I relate to that. Yeah, I can relate to that in that there are many times when I'm in a room and I'm like, what the hell am I doing here with all these amazing people? Like what's that about? I should not be here. And I've realized that you're never in a room you're not supposed to be in. If you're in the room, you deserve to be in the room, period. So that's helped me just take a step back.
Trauma.
What else? So this is what happens when you prep for a colonoscopy. You just
you
can't
have no
talk
protein
anymore.
In your mind right now. Your ass
exactly.
is begging you to get rid of shit.
Yes, but like you have to step back and remember that you're there for a reason. To just accept it, just own it, you know. And that's helped me. I hear your point too about having a family, right? If I, you know, have this amazing place that you have, with all these incredible things that inspire you in it. That's wonderful. And yet you're like, well, what else is there? What about family? All that stuff. Like I could understand where your head might start to spin and be like, what happens if I don't throw the parties? Is it just, do I turn into Howard Hughes or whatever it is? You know what I mean? But you won't, man. You won't. There's too many. You're a people gatherer. You have an energy to you that just people like it. So don't sweat it.
Well, I thank you, my friend.
Yeah,
thank you, my friend. But look, back to you.
Back to me.
It's inside of you.
It is inside of me. What else? We haven't talked about. What haven't we talked about? Well, Brooklyn.
Well, I definitely want to talk about Brooklyn. But you know that whole journey from going from the state into this, like you know, starring on things, and doing things. You were always like going, hey, you. I remember playing poker with you, and I remember being at bars with you.
Yeah.
And it's just like, hey, Joe, what are you doing? I was like, oh, you know, I might do this independent thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's paying. I remember going up to you, and you're in a quadruple banger, it's called. It's four. You know, you're staying in this thing that's probably the size of one of those little private urinals.
Yeah.
You know, we've all been in those. And you were just like, yeah, I'm doing this little bit part. I've waited 14 hours. I haven't shot yet. And I could just tell, like, you know, you didn't show up, but I knew it. Like, you're like, I just want something to hit.
Yeah,
I just want to be able to go on set every day and have a purpose.
Yeah.
And say, I'm here to do my part and work. You wanted to work.
You're starting, this is a very interesting part of the conversation we're segueing into now. Because what you're talking about is accepting when your time is, right? I had a long time accepting when my time was going to be. Many actors go through that. Mark Evan Jackson just did a podcast with Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And I was talking about Brooklyn Nine-Nine in that I almost didn't go in for Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I almost didn't get Brooklyn Nine-Nine because I'd gone in, I put myself on tape for Allison Jones. Then they wanted me to come back in for a callback or a session. At that point, it was during a very kind of dark time in my career, in my head about my career. Like, you know what? I've done Superbad. I've done all these like little movies, like enough's enough. Like everyone knows what I can do. Like cast me or don't cast me, but like I'm tired of it. I was really, the ego was overwhelming, swallowing me up. And so I almost didn't go. And if I didn't go, I would not be on the show, clearly. More importantly, the lesson learned is that no one owes you anything. And if you're doing a job because you're expecting to get another job, you got to find what you like about it. I know that you hear it all the time. You find the joy in what you do. But the older you get, you realize that's really the truth because it put me in such a mood of I owe this and people know what I can do and just give it to me. Entitlement that it really starts to weigh you down and it starts to infiltrate you in negative ways and you don't enjoy where you're around. I remember Ken Marino, that's why he's such a great guy. His wife, Erica Oyama, wrote this really funny digital series called Burning Love that Ken was in.
I love it.
So many funny people were in that. And I was shooting that, and I was just in a terrible mood. And like, Ken had to bring me inside. Like, while we're shooting, you know, I didn't know disruption during the set, but between takes, I was just like not the greatest of moods. And he's like, "What's up, man?" He's like, "Man," I said, "Ken, I love you. I love this. This is so funny. Like, am I just going to be doing this? Like, web shows?" Like, it was really narrow-minded, ungrateful type of stuff. And he heard me as a friend, and he related. And here I am talking to someone that also hadn't got his big break. Ken's amazing. He's seen all this stuff, but also hadn't gotten his break. And you realize you just end up sounding like a complete asshole because you can't see your path. You can't see when is your time. And it took me a while. And if I had kept in that kind of mode, well, then I don't get Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And now Brooklyn Nine-Nine has given me a gift that is above and beyond. I mean, I have a new family. I've gone through life changes. Several of us have gotten married. Several of us have had kids, including myself. If I had like, no, fuck it, I'm not going in, that is not open to me anymore. That's not here. And that's a very humbling place to be when you're like, ah, now I'm getting it. The struggle's real. Even after you think you've made the big time, not the big time, but like Superbad. I did Superbad. I'm like, that movie was huge. I'm like, oh, well, here we go. It's only a matter of time now. Start getting the calls. Here they come. They don't come. You know, you still have to go in. You still have to do all that stuff. So you just have to keep it in check because no one owes you anything. No one's going to give you the money for the movie. No one's going to write the script for you. No one's going to like create the ideal part for you. You find it. You get it. Or just follow. Or if you don't know how to get it, follow things that are coming at you, that are opening up to you. And maybe that will lead you there. I don't know. There was a lot of that stuff going on for me about 7 years ago.
I don't think I've ever listened that hard in my life. Ryan, I noticed you too. I noticed there was an energy shift. What you just said was worth the whole podcast and worth it to me. And I know worth it to Ryan because that shit right there is so vital. And whether you're an actor or not, it's very important. You're right. When you're, the ego gets in the way. The ego, my fucking ego has gotten in the way of so many things where I'm like, even on this, I'll even talk about this podcast. Like now, in the beginning, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't sound good. I don't want to hear my voice. I never listen to my voice.
Yeah.
But I've gotten so many responses and people's lives have changed and it gives me purpose and I love it. Dax gets so many more listeners than I do. I start comparing. You start comparing.
Comparison's hard.
Why does
man.
He? Well, he's a bigger star than you. That's why he gets bigger listeners. I know, but he got the idea from being on my podcast.
But he also,
yeah. But he's great. And for some reason, he's got a bigger audience than you. So what? And then I'm like, I know. No, I love. I love him. He deserves it. I love Dax. He's one of my best friends. But I guess it's kind of jealous. I'm like,
yeah.
God, it is. I'm going to be honest. I love my podcast. I think I do a really good job. I think people enjoy it. I want more listeners.
You know what the lesson?
Fucking have more listeners.
More listeners. You know the lesson I learned was,
please.
As soon as you realize that there's abundance, you'll be all right with that. There's room really for everybody. So Dax absolutely deserves that.
Of course.
That podcast. He's great at it. And you're great at this. So there's just room for everybody. I mean, that's just a bigger lesson.
Can I borrow some from him?
Sure.
Can I just say, Dax,
rent him out.
Just give me 5% of your audience. 5% of Dax's audience, yeah. Come over here.
Just come on over.
Because by the way, my fans are so loyal and the listeners are so loyal. And even like Jen from Legendary Films, who I met with about some projects 2 weeks ago. I got an email from her today saying, I love the podcast. I listen to it. It's so good. And I'm like, oh my God. So people are listening and I love it. I'm not going to stop. I don't care if it's like, no, but as long as one person's listening, whoever you are out there, I really love doing it. So I make a lot of money or no money or whatever, I'm going to continue to do this because I really love talking to people like you.
You could tell.
I just like it. I'd like to do this my whole life.
How great is it to have an intimate conversation with interesting people, some of which you have a history like myself, others you met for the first time. It's the best. You said something reminded me of another story about comparison and jealousy. It's, I guess, 2000. The state is long done. I have been doing like commercials here and there, you know, maybe an independent film or here, some voiceover, nothing very exciting. And yet I see all my state compatriots kind of doing their
working.
Working.
Yeah.
I get this audition for a movie. It's Artie Lang's Beer League. I'm in the audition. The casting director, and I won't name her name, says, okay, you're gonna slate, and then we're gonna you can slate your name. I'm gonna ask you some questions. And then we're going to go into the scene. And by the way, there's no improvising. They really, you know, stick to the script. I'm like, oh yeah, all right, sure. So, hi, Joe Latrulio. Yeah, Joe. And so you were a member of the state. Uh-huh. Member of the state, sketch comedy, met at NYU. And so many of your compatriots are like working at Reno 911, and some did Wet Hot, and everyone seems to be like working except for you. The slate is running, by the way. The camera's on me. What is that all about? I'm like, well, you know, I'm just trying to do my thing, you know. Literally, inside, I'm like, ready. I can't believe it. I'm furious. Like, this ego and the comparison is just coming at me full force now because of this question. And I just decided, well, you know, I'm just doing my thing. And in my head, I decided, oh, I'm going to be improvising now. There's no sticking to the script now. I ended up booking the part, and it was It was a really good feeling knowing that when you're up against it and they're throwing, you know, egg on your face and they're just really kind of beating you, just stand up, come at them. Now, in her defense, I don't think she meant to make me feel that way. I don't know.
She just wasn't a good interviewer.
I don't think she was a good interviewer, and I don't very aware of the terrible insecurities of actors.
Jesus.
And the level of comparison that goes on with us every minute of the day. So I don't, you know, I'm painting her as a terrible person. She's not, I'm sure. But that was a terrible moment for me, that I came out and I rose out of the ashes.
You're the Phoenix.
I was the Phoenix.
Do you think that doctors look at other doctors and go, I'm just as good of a doctor as him. I don't have as many patients.
Yeah.
How much is he making? Oh my God, I went to...
How many heart surgeries did Ron do?
I went to the University of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Where do you go, DeVry?
Oh.
I mean, I could...
He went to St. John's?
I mean, I think everybody does it though, don't they?
Yeah.
I think everybody, whether you're driving a UPS truck, same
right.
thing. It's like,
right.
Dude, he's making more than me. I bust my ass. I work twice as hard as he is.
comparison, jealousy, they're just monsters, man. But you know what? Look, I still get it. I'm just able to be like, all right, that's what I'm feeling now. You still get it, right? You let it, you know that it's going to dissipate. It's
jealousy?
Gonna go away. Yeah.
Do you know what? I'm. It's getting less and less. It truly,
good.
It's evaporating because I'm really going, what does it matter? What is it? Because honestly.
Well, you feel like you're probably in the right place right now.
I'm getting there because I really feel like when I'm 80 and I die. What does all these things matter? What does the house matter and jobs that I've done? What matters is the memories and the friendships and the things that the enjoyment of life.
Yeah.
The taking, living, not going through the motions, not trying to compare, not trying to be someone, but being the best you can be, being the best human you can be, giving and trying to love. And those are the things I'm working on. So when my agent gets mad and says, dude, you know, do you want to work again? Do you want to like, I'm like, I am, I'm writing a horror script right now. I'm pitching the script that I wrote for TV. I'm doing an animated series with my friend Harland. I am doing two podcasts. This is what I want to do, but that's not where the big bread and butter money comes from. I go, you know what? If Spielberg calls you, let me know. Cause I'll answer that fucking call.
Yeah.
I'm lucky, by the way. This isn't like, look, dude, I've said this. If I am like broke and someone goes, well, yes, I'll do anything. I don't care what it is. I work at Burger King to make money. I don't care. That's how my whole mentality was. Work, 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 work. But then I got to a point where, look, I'm not fucking, I don't have like, I don't Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Who knows what the fuck? I'm just saying I don't have the kind of money where I could just, I'm comfortable right now. I'm comfortable that I don't have to just, I have to work. I still have to make money.
You probably have some fuck you money, right?
I don't know how much fuck you. Yeah, it's more. Not
I mean,
fuck,
that,
yeah.
That for me, you know, many goals for a career. But for me is to, that's why Brooklyn Nine-Nine is just amazing. You know, is to have a great job, obviously, and with people that you love. But, you know, you don't have control over that. Ideally, I'd love to have a nice savings of money. So, like, if jobs come along that I really don't want to do, I can say no.
Yeah.
I want to work on this movie. I think... For many actors, many people in the creative arts, I think, have that goal. That's realistic. No one wants to do anything they don't want to do. I think part of the reason maybe it's easier for the jealousy to go away now is like, well, you know what? I'm like in your 20, you don't know. Everything is possible. You don't know what you want to do. And you see people doing, oh, that looks cool. That looks cool. That looks great. I want to do that. I want to do that. And you get older and you're like, oh, I actually want to do this and I'm doing it. You know, I'm writing my movie or what, and it makes it easier. Then you're not comparing.
Yeah. You know, I also think that
you feel like
after,
you're in the right place
after 25 years of, you know, whatever, I'm 47. There has to come a moment where you go, oh, that's not working for me.
Yeah. Also, by the way, and the bigger thing
that doesn't work,
by the way, we're all dust.
That, all right. That's what I was trying to say.
We're all dust.
That's what I was trying in the wind.
Yeah. In the wind. We're all Kansas lovers.
that's what I was saying. You said it more frankly, more compact. We're all so what does it matter? You know what makes me feel better?
Pizza.
Making someone else feel good. Maybe, you know, I think we're all put on this earth maybe to just make other people happy, which will make us happy if we're making other people happy. If we're helping other people, that's making us feel good. If you're doing something that contributes to society or humanity, whatever it is, and I think for a lot of my life, it was me, show, voiceover, travel, friends, this. There wasn't that connection. And now just working with hands-on in charities and working with people and trying to help people and going somewhere for 4 hours to and leaving going, I might have helped someone today. I hope I did. That's to me, I swear, it actually makes me tear up a little because, so Food on Foot is a nonprofit organization that I'm a part of. It's for homeless people, and they are high functioning homeless people. So a lot of times people get money from the government that are mentally ill and things, but the people that are actually high functioning that could work and they could do, those are the people that suffer. So they don't get the money. So a lot of times you see these people on Sundays when you're feeding the homeless and you're doing these things. And this organization's great because it says, if you're motivated, if you want to be, if you want to have a job, if you want to have a place to live, you can.
Yeah.
And that's what the organization's about. We're going to help you do that, but you have to show us.
That's great.
That you're motivated. So just for Sunday, this guy, Eric, graduated the program. And I'm just there and I'm, you know, and we're all, there's 100 and something people there, and people come there just to say, oh, I fed the homeless today. And that's nice. They showed up, whatever. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You're there. You're there. And he starts giving his speech about just saying, hey, man, you know, and he was very humble. And he's just like, you know, telling about, this is where I was and what this organization did. And I was just lost in that. And in my heart,
that's so great. I felt part
it.
Of that.
And I honestly had to back up because I didn't want all these people to see me kind of crying.
Yeah.
So I just backed up and that feeling is worth so much more. Right. Than most of the bullshit feelings that you get that aren't even real.
Anything, you know? Anything to stop thinking about yourself is a good thing, I think. I mean, you know, that's a good lesson to remember. Like, oh, I got to get it off of me. It's just, you feel like a whole weight is off you. You're like, and then like what you're saying, you see this change that you're making in other people. It's such a, wasn't Letterman talking about this that, I think after his heart attack, he was talking about like just how great it is to like help people. Like it's really true. Like for instance, my amazing wife, Beth Dover, is at the federal building right now, bonding an immigrant out of jail so he can get with his family. You know, she's with this organization called Immigrant Families Together that will make a huge difference to a person. I mean, she's incredible for many, many reasons, but that is only one of many things I love about her. But that feeling is like uncomparable to anything. Like, can you imagine? You're going to have a picture of a man that gets to go back to his three kids and his wife that are here in San Antonio that he was going to get to. This is the real stuff. Like, it's better than like an audition that you're going to miss or an episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. You know, it's real. It's real. The struggle's real.
It's real.
You know, and it's good to remember stuff like that. I need to do more of it.
I think everyone needs to do more of it. I think if everybody just took one day out of the week to do something, just to go to a old age home, go to a convalescent home, go to a homeless shelter, join Food on Foot, join me on a Sunday, go to a Ronald McDonald House, help Echoes of Hope with foster youth, anything a day. And you spend 3 hours and you're going to go, what am I doing? I worry about me all the time. And this is just taking a moment. You'll be surprised.
You'll be surprised at how good you feel. Like it is like, oh my God, this is
How did incredible. I not think of this?
Yeah.
Helping other people. How have I been so blind?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Helping people feels good. Yeah. Hey.
Do you stress? Do you still on set? When you're learning your lines?
No.
Are you stressed at all anymore?
No, you know your stuff.
You are excited about work. Mm-hmm. You don't ever go, oh my God, I'm fucking up. I can't do this.
No. And
has that ever happened?
Oh, of course. I think early in the beginning, you don't want to fuck up, and you don't want to. You think you're not good enough, or you're trying to get your sea legs on whatever new production you're on. But I mean, I've been doing this so long. And I love that I've been doing it so long that it is second nature. I remember there was a time where I used to work for like an hour every night. I just don't have the time to do anymore. Dude. And I do stuff now, like morning of, like makeup trail, look at sides and start like learning them and start thinking of bits
you
immediately.
You learn the lines on the day of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's more improvisational feeling.
No, because it's just like such a tool now. Like it's 7 years, like, you know, TV, yeah. You get used to like how much time you'll have between shots and like, you know, you have time to really look at it. You also know your writers, you know, the language of the script, you know, that they know they're writing for your character. So it's easy for you to think that like that character and therefore remember it easier.
Yeah.
So true. Know, you're not thrown. Like if I get a job tomorrow where I'm playing this like dramatic role,
you have
like
a speech or
verbiage, or even not a speech, but longer lines that have different rhythms.
You'll work on it.
I need
a while.
To work on that. Like, Charles Boyle is like, you know, back of my hand, you know,
right.
In a great way. And so I don't stress out about how to do Boyle anymore, you know?
So it's normal for me, like when I'm doing a role or it's dramatic or whatever, that I really take a couple of days to learn those lines that I have to know. They're not just like a line here, three lines here. If you're in a big chunks of scene and you have speeches and things like that, I've never been one to wake up, go to work, look in the trail and go, oh, here we go. And yeah, I got it. I know those people, you, Kristen Bell, you know, whatever, a lot of people. There's something that's so stressful to me about not knowing my lines when I'm on set. There's something so stressful to me that maybe it's ADD. Maybe in this new drug that I'm on for my ADD, which helps me, maybe I could do it.
Yeah.
But I'm so distracted that, you know, when I'm on set and there's like, oh, we're going to shoot it now, or I just have to be so prepared.
Yeah. Well, you're a hard worker. You know how long it takes to like.
I wish I could do what you do.
Well, in Smallville, were you like that even after a few seasons?
It didn't matter because I always had a lot of lines. And
I
always,
but
I couldn't learn them. Like, you know, even Jensen, I was talking on Supernatural, and those guys, they'll look at it and they'll have tons of stuff. And they go, yeah. I got it. Yeah, pretty good. Yeah. I'll get it on the second take.
Yeah.
I think I'm so consumed and worried about failing and everybody looking at me like I'm not good and
right.
I'm a failure, that I'm so hard on myself that's where that comes from. And I don't know how to change that.
Right. You don't. You know, that's a great thing to know about yourself.
You know, by the way, I know we started late because I gave you a tour around the homestead.
I don't care. I'm in no toys. Oh, you want to do some quick lightning rounds? I just feel, did you get to everything?
You know, it's not about getting to everything. It's more about life, like the moments. You'll see how these work. But, you know, lightning rounds. Are you sure you got everything? We haven't even.
I don't know.
Jenna Fisher was like, do you even want to talk about The Office? I go, not really.
Oh, that's so cool.
Because everybody talks about The Office.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Andy Samberg, Terry Crews, all these guys.
Yeah.
Is there, obviously, you have to say
the
this.
The girls.
Are there anyone on that set that you're just like, oof?
No.
Are they all great?
Yes. I know.
It's
like
fun?
You want the dirt. But yes, they're all incredible people. They really are. And
Do you party with Samberg?
Do I party with him?
Hey,
we're friends.
Joe, I want you to come out with me tonight. Joe, you want to go to this thing?
Yeah, we don't go out a lot because he's also a father, and you know he's got a life. But like here's what we do. So Andy and I have this thing every year where we make a bet. It used to be about the show where we're like, how many flashbacks do you think there'll be this season? And that was fun for a while. You make like a over under on it, you know.
And you bet for money.
For money, or like steak dinner is what we do.
Okay.
And so we haven't done that in a while. But now, the past 3 years, we've been doing like who has the worst record, the Jets. Or the Niners. He's San Francisco.
Niners are doing well.
Yeah, and so exactly. So what I'm getting to, there was one season where, you know, the Jets were doing it was it was who had the worst
record.
Who had the worst record, and the Jets got off to a great start, and the Niners were terrible. And it looked like I was going to lose. It looks like the Jets would have the better record. And then the last half of the season, the Jets tank, and like the Niners had this surge, and the Jets end up having a worse season, therefore the steak dinner. That is not the case this year, where it's such a joke. The bet was, who has the better record? The Jets ain't going to do it this year.
Yeah.
0-4 and 4-0. That's our bet. That's our kind of, and then we go out for a steak dinner and talk about
it. Is it hard to balance? Like you say, you're dealing with a lot of stress. You're going to therapy. In therapy sessions, what do you talk about? What will you say? She'll say, Joe, how are you doing? And you'll say, I'm stressed out of my ass. I can't stop obsessing about this movie that isn't here. I don't know if Brooklyn Nine-Nine's coming back. I don't know what's going on. My wife's doing this charity work with immigrants. Look at me. I'm worrying about things that aren't that important.
Right.
I can't get it straight.
I'm new to therapy. Like, I can't get it up. I don't know really what to talk about there. So I get there, and I just start talking about my day and my mood and, you know, issues. Like, my issues are like not that different. Like, insecurity, am I being the best person I can be? You know, am I giving back? Am I a good husband? Am I a good father? You know, all the basic boring shit that a lot of people, and not boring shit, but you know, important stuff. But there's nothing specific. There's no like specific issues. Like, I'm gonna talk about how great it was to do this.
You are?
Yeah. And then she's gonna like, why was it great? I'm like, well, because I got to see my friend Rosie. I got to talk about some things I don't talk about often. I got to see his house. I got to meet Ryan. And then you go from there. And, you know, and then I'm a little nervous about getting a camera up my ass tomorrow. A little nervous about that.
You'll be asleep.
You know, I'll be asleep.
In fact, if you want, I have an Ambien. I could put you to sleep, put a camera up your ass, wake you up, and say, hey, how'd that feel?
I end up getting groceries at 2 a.m. and not remembering it. Ambien wigs me out.
Do you take anything? Do you take any supplements?
No, nothing.
You don't take any Zoloft, any stress reliever. You don't take any.
I've never
been. Have you thought about it? Like, I should take something. It will take the edge off.
I'm not a depressive person. And I think as of late, because of the stress, I'm like, am I depressed? Like, I should look into that. But I've always been a person that's pretty outgoing, enthusiastic, optimistic, annoyingly so, I think sometimes, you know, not eager, you know, but I've always had like an outlook of like, hey man, it is what it is. It's life, and let's just keep moving on. I don't get too wrapped up in sadness, because, and I'm not trying to
demean
anyone that struggles with that. That's real, but like, that's just never been my disposition. And so, if it was, I would definitely be taking great parents.
Do you think
married 55 years?
Do you think that's a good part of it?
I think so.
I mean, honestly, if your parents were, I mean, look, did they say, Joe, I love you. Joe, I'm proud of you.
They do.
Joe,
they have.
The Mets suck. I mean, do they do all these things?
They do all these things, yes.
So, see, I think that's vital.
Yeah.
But look, and again, you have to go one day in life, you have to say if you had bad childhood, which things happen.
Sure.
You have to say, all right, well, I'm my own person now. I have to get over these things.
Yeah.
And I think for a long time, a lot of people like myself just kind of, you know, it's hard. It's hard to all of a sudden go, all right, forget all those things that happened. Forget not having this.
Yeah.
But I'm glad. I'm glad that you're honest about that. I'm glad you had a great childhood. And that shows in the person you are.
Yeah. I mean, look, our family has dysfunction for sure. But affection was never an issue in the household. And letting you know what was right or wrong or what you're proud or disappointed in was always very open and transparent. I think that's healthy. Ultimately, it's like, do you feel safe, right? Like, I have a kid now. I'm like, my job is to love and protect this child and just make him feel safe. I feel like if you feel safe, then you're going to be off. You have a good start.
I think if you feel safe, whether you're a child or as an adult, you're going to be the best you can be.
Yeah.
I think that if I'm safe, whether it's on set with people who I respect and I feel comfortable, I could try things, I could take risks. They're not looking at me funny. Whether you feel safe as a kid, which is most vital, to be like, hey, you know, even if I drop the ball, I'm not a stupid idiot. I don't suck. My dad's proud. Or those things are so important. I think being safe,
it sets you up. It sets you up for a really productive life that's receptive to everything.
Well, you know what? You've just earned yourself an Inside of You mug.
I want one.
Yep, you got one on the back of it. Can you read what it says?
It says.
You should know this already, because you read the sides and you get it right away. You read that 2 hours ago.
Thank you for allowing me to be inside of you.
That's right. I want you to bring that. I want you to use it. It's a good mug. It's a good looking mug. Admit it.
I do admit it, and I want to thank you for having me, and I love you, brother. This has been great.
What's your Instagram and your Twitter handles?
Joe Latrulio at Joe Latrulio for both, for Twitter and Instagram.
Brooklyn 99 can be your
Brooklyn 99 is coming out mid season January. The new season 7 will start sometime in January, and it'll be great and funny.
It's January. It's starting. In other words, you've shot all these.
We're seven out of 13 for this season. So we're mid shooting right now.
How many episodes have you done
total?
Mm-hmm.
We've done 138 so far. At the end of this season, it will be 143 episodes.
So you renegotiated, of course.
We did.
Season 3.
After season six.
So you waited.
After season six.
So after season six.
You renegotiate, yeah.
So you waited 6 seasons.
We had to. We didn't wait.
After the second season, we renegotiated.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think we were in a position to do
now,
that.
Now, was it hard? Is everybody treated equally, or obviously as Sam?
No, it was tiered. It was tiered.
It's tiered.
Joe,
this is what we're going to pay. And you're like, was it hard?
But not really.
It works itself out.
Yeah, it works out. It was paid well. I was happy. The women weren't paid as well, and that was wrong, and now they are getting paid equally in the second contract, and so I think that's important. Yeah,
it is important.
Yeah. So, but again, the money is fine, but it was, you know, the money's giving me a good life, but it was really about having a thing that I love doing, going to a place where these people, we're in it together to do something funny. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
No, you do.
No, I'm just like,
look,
no,
man, really. I hope.
Ryan just rolled his eyes. He's looking up. Ryan's bored, by the way.
Joe, I hope someday I get to work with you because I think it would be a blast.
Me too.
I really love you as a human being and as a friend. And I know we haven't seen each other in years. And, you know, it's sort of life. But I'm like, this moment right here is very special to me.
That's why I came.
I've always liked you, and I appreciate you coming here today. And I love you, buddy. Thank you for allowing me to be
inside, buddy. Thanks, buddy.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.